Hi, and welcome back to the Ask a Private Lender podcast. As always, I'm Lawrence, joined by my co-host Joseph. And today we are excited to have Mark Poulin from Cedar Peaks joining us. Mark, thanks for stopping in.
My pleasure. Thank you. Hello, everybody.
And, you know, when I say stopping in, it's funny because you're probably about 3,000 kilometers away from us. But, you know, due to the internet, we're able to do this. And I think with what's going on today, this is more common than what used to be the case. So
it absolutely is.
Definitely a good thing. So for people who don't know, Mark, been in the financial game for a really long time. I guess it's around 40 years now from, you know, working with credit unions, banks, obviously private lending. Being in that space for such a long period of time, we're really happy to have you because you have such a great wealth of knowledge that we think that you could pass along to people listening today. Why don't you talk about a little bit about, you know, your path to getting to become a private lender, some of the businesses you were involved in earlier on that kind of gave you that path to where you are today. And start there, I guess.
And one more thing I'd like to add is the fact that it's basically almost 20 years that he's been in the private lending space. So, you know, for all the younger guys listening out, like, this is a guy who knows what he's doing. He survived a lot of interesting things and times in the last year. So please tell us the story. We want to hear all about it.
Thanks. That's awesome. So really my first career type job was in property management, managing some apartments, kind of like an assistant, a go-to guy, collecting rents, getting to know real estate, tenants and properties and so on here in Calgary. I've always been based in Calgary for the most part. From there, I moved over into the banking. I was with Bank of Nova Scotia for a few years. Then I joined the local credit union here in Calgary. I was with them for 8 years. So I had about a 10-12 year banking career, all in lending, of course. And from there, the credit union system basically in Calgary in the mid-80s during the high interest rate period, the credit union system went through a major restructuring and they amalgamated about 12 credit unions into one. And that made, Co-op Credit Union on one corner, Tuxedo Credit Union across the other corner, Bridgeland Credit Union on that corner.
Right.
And they brought in a guy from Vancouver to straighten this mess out and took him a number of years. But that gave an opportunity for a lot of amalgamations and buyouts. At that point in time, a friend of mine was in the real estate business. And he said, Mark, you're a natural for real estate. You should be a realtor. So I chose that option and left the banking world and went into selling real estate. Very successful career at that, again, here in Calgary for another 10 or 12 years. And then I met a lady that I really liked to spend time with.
Okay.
And real estate doesn't allow you a lot of time to do that. You're on call all the time and no nights, no weekends. And so at that point in time, a buddy of mine was in the private lending world. He had been with a government job, Alberta Opportunity, raising money for venture capital, and they laid him off, of course, during the 80s, and he started private lending. He was a good friend of mine, good customer at the credit union. He said, Mark, you should come into private lending. You're a natural. You got banking, you got real estate, you got lending. You know, this is just a great fit. That was exactly 20 years ago in 3 months.
Wow.
Did
you start the business with your friend, or did you do it? You just did it yourself. How did that come about?
Great question. My friend, he had his own brokerage. And in Alberta, you have to operate under another brokerage for a minimum of 2 years before you're able to open up your own brokerage and be a broker of record and so on. So I was with him for 2 years, just about 2.5 years. And then Diane, my lovely wife, many of you will know, we started Cedar Peaks Mortgage almost 20 years ago. We started with $140,000 of our own money. And today we're administering roughly $60 million of mortgages under admin.
It's a great
phenomenal. Story. That's an amazing story.
Really good.
Yeah.
And 20 years ago in the private mortgage space, I'm assuming, and correct me if I'm wrong, but like the kinds of deals you were doing 20 years ago differ greatly than the kinds of deals that you're doing today, right? The business has grown significantly over those 20 years and you've been there that whole way. what are the differences that you've seen over that time?
Well, the deals today are much, much larger than what they were 20 years ago. They're more diversified into multifamily, construction, industrial, and a much broader range of property types and locations. Back in the first 5-7 years of business, it was almost all residential. And, you know, smaller amounts, you know, 30 to 100,000. It was much different then than it is now, for sure.
Very interesting. And do you lend just in the Calgary area, or are you spread out?
What's your geographical area?
Yeah.
Technically, it's Alberta and BC. Okay. And we lend all over Alberta, all over BC, although some brokers listen and go, I tried you to get to some remote island up BC that you can only get to by boat, and you said no. So yeah. There are limitations, right? But we are licensed in Alberta and BC, and if the deal makes sense, location, property, border, all the stuff that you hear from every single AB and private lender, then we'll look at it.
And in Alberta, you know, forgive me, like I don't know real estate that well in Alberta, right? I'm an Ontario guy. That's kind of my neck of the woods, so I know what's going on here. How close is the oil industry connected to real estate prices where you guys lend?
It's close.
Really?
Absolutely. I will say this. Over the years, Alberta used to be a one-horse town. It was oil and gas.
Right.
Over the years, it has diversified somewhat. A lot of IT has come in, medical supplies, insurance head offices. We have diversified. But at the end of the day, Alberta goes as oil and gas goes.
If I recall correctly, back when oil was going up, and I guess in 08, or after, well, once, you know, price hit $100 a barrel or whatever it was, prices for you guys were going through the roof. I remember some random town, which I eventually figured out to be called Fort McMurray, houses were going for a lot of money and people couldn't understand why things were so expensive there. But it made sense to all the oil workers who made hundreds of thousands of dollars were living there. And so prices just went up. It was interesting to see. And then so when oil went down, how badly was the market hit with that?
When oil really hit the rock bottom, which was, let's just say, $20 a barrel.
Yeah.
It depends on price sector that you're in. But anything over $2 million dropped significantly. And I mean 30, 40%. You know, wow. $2, $3 million, $4 million houses, easy, 30, 40%.
Wow.
Anything under $1 million, 20%.
So what did you do in that situation? Did you hold your loans and ride it out? You know, what was the strategy there? You know, when, you know, you have all these loans on the books and you're seeing the price of real estate is, I don't want to say it a free fall, but it's going down. And
well, the price are definitely eroding for sure.
Yeah, you don't know how far it's going to go. You know, what was your strategy there? I'm sure investors were calling. Right? I'm sure they were asking questions.
Sure. And what people don't realize is just because your market goes down, just because you might be underwater on your house, just because you used to be at 60% loan to value and now you might be at 90%, that doesn't mean you're going to stop paying. Right? No matter what happened to the value of my house, no matter what, if I have the ability, I'm going to make my mortgage payment.
For okay, sure.
The value is irrelevant. Luckily for us, most people we dealt with had that type of integrity.
Yeah, and I would imagine most people feel that way about their primary residence. Right?
It's not just a financial attachment. There's an emotional attachment to it.
Absolutely. And they, you know, the thing was, you know, Alberta's a boom and bust province, always has been. They know it's going to come back. If you own a blue chip stock, RBC, for example, and it was at 60 and today's at 30, what are you going to do? You're going to hold it and ride it and it'll come back up.
Of course.
So luckily for us, most of our borrowers had the integrity and said, our equity position is not what it once was, but we are a good person. Our employment hasn't been infected. Sure, our market value of our home has, but our employment and income hasn't. We're just going to continue making those payments. I wish I could tell you that was every single case, but it wasn't. Okay.
Right.
But we had to go through, as every lender did, and I don't care if you're RBC or Cedar Peaks or a Schedule One or Tier Bank, you had foreclosures in 2008. You couldn't help it.
Right. Yeah. I have a friend who is, his family's in the building business, a very large builder. And back when the market wasn't great in the 90s, they would sometimes lend money out to get to help people to buy their properties, right? They'd be the lender. And they got a call from someone who purchased a property from them. And they came into the office and they said, the interest rates are quite high. Is it possible that you can lower them for us? And that's, you know, it's a good question to ask. And the question came, like, what's the reasoning? You know, when you took it out, you knew what the payment was. And they said, you know, one of us lost our job. And just so you know, I eat dinner on Monday and my husband eats dinner on Tuesday. And we go back and forth to make sure that we could stay in our home. That's what we do. So to go back to the point you were making, people want to hold on to their residence regardless of circumstance. Right? They have their kids there. It's their one place where they can put their head down and they feel safe. And they're going to, I don't want to say beg, borrow, and steal, but they're going to do whatever it is possible to stay there. So for people who are thinking about investing in the private mortgage business, it's a great business to be in, right? And if you're an investor that's, you know, in Mark's area, you know, as you can see, I mean, very knowledgeable, he's someone you should definitely reach out to get a little bit more information, because the way I look at the private mortgage business, risk versus reward is kind of out of whack in that space, in terms of you're getting such a high return for what I feel, I don't want to say it's minimal risk, but essentially it's minimal risk. It's a great.
No, Laurie, you hit it, because, you know, people invest in stocks. They can lose money. Mutual funds that the banks manage don't always perform well. You put money in with Mark or any other autumn, you know, client, you're talking about returns between 6, 7, 8, 9, potentially 10% for a real estate backed security.
Right.
That you can touch, you can drive by. There's an emotional attachment to the home. There is everything that's supposed to be. Everything that lines up when it comes to that type of investment is a great investment.
Yeah, and I appreciate you guys bringing that up and putting that out there. And in the event that you do have a foreclosure and a default, you always have the option of going, you know what, let's just hold this property. Let's rent it out.
Right.
You've always got a piece of real estate that you don't have to fire sale out.
That's true. So, sometimes the rental rate may be better than the monthly payment.
Right. Yeah, no kidding.
The average might be better, so that's interesting.
Obviously, not every deal is going to be perfect, and you're going to have your bumps in the road along the way.
For sure.
How much has your real estate license been a benefactor to you analyzing the deals? Because, you know, you get these appraisals, and of course, sometimes the brokers order the appraisal, and they have a relationship with the appraiser, and you look at it and go, well, the value is a little high there. How much has your license or your understanding of the real estate market been a key factor in you really digging deep and understanding and underwriting those deals properly?
Sure. It's been invaluable. And I quit selling actively real estate 15, 16 years ago, and have not actively taken a buyer in my vehicle or listed a property for that length of time. Yet I continue to pay my annual real estate dues and fees. And there's three levels of them. There's local, provincial, and national. And it's the continuing education requirements to maintain your license. And the reason I do that is the valuable information I have and require in what I do to maintain that knowledge and expertise in the real estate field, to recognize flaws or values or marketability of properties. So I continue to maintain that real estate license for that very reason.
Yeah, I mean, it's good to be able to do your own research. I mean, especially when you're lending out money, like, you know, the last thing that you want to do as a business owner or you're running, or anyone that's lending out money or running a fund, is have to rely on other people to tell you what a property is worth, right? You want to be able to dig in deep and figure it out for yourself. And that way you can explain to investors, hey, you know, appraisal maybe came back at $1 million or 500,000. I don't feel it's worth that much money. So whereas the broker thinks we're giving them a 65% loan to value deal, I think we're closer to like the 70, 75, and we're going to price accordingly, right? So we're
at the risk, right?
So, yeah, absolutely. Now, one thing that obviously you can't help, or you could try to avoid it, is fraud. I mean, that comes up in our industry, right? It's something that's, it's there. No matter how much we do to try to avoid it, it can always happen. Have you ever been a victim through like Cedar Peaks? Have you ever been hit with any type of a deal fraud sideways because of that?
Believe it or not, we have not.
Wow.
That's amazing. That's incredible.
Been a victim of fraud.
Wow.
One of my investors was involved in a scam. It did not involve Cedar Peaks whatsoever, but some guy, it's pretty easy to transfer title here in Alberta. You just can forge a signature, go down to land titles and transfer your property from Grandma Sally to con man Fred.
Wow.
It's pretty easy.
Wow.
And this guy did this. He got hold of a transfer of land document, forged the owner's signature. It was clear title, got title changed into his name, borrowed money against it, clear title. And so my investors, they were covered from title insurance.
Title insurance, of course.
Title insurance, land titles insurance, they were covered, but it was not a pleasant experience. So they were a victim of fraud. Luckily, we have never been a victim of outright fraud.
20 years, that's a good...
honestly, that's a pretty good track record.
Yeah, I know. 100%
clearance, I love it.
That's great. And Cedar Peaks, you guys deal with mortgage brokers. Do you do direct-to-consumer as well, or is it mainly brokers that send you business?
It is mainly brokers. I would say 95%+
okay.
is mainly brokers.
Which is the more common? It's fairly common now, right?
Sure. What type of deals do you look for? Like if a broker is listening right now and they're like, hey, you know, I'm in the area. I've never tried Cedar Peaks before. Obviously, you don't want people just sending in stuff you're not interested in because it's a waste of everyone's time. But what's your wheelhouse? You know, is there something specific that maybe you do that others don't? You know, what are you looking for?
Well, first of all, I actually encourage brokers to send us any file that requires private financing. It takes us 5 minutes to say hi, thank you, and I'm sorry, and this is why it's not a fit.
Okay.
We enjoy doing that.
Right.
So don't be afraid to send Pender Island or somewhere, you know, because it gives us an opportunity to say hi, send you our guidelines.
Absolutely.
Thank you for your business. Thanks for thinking of us. You know, let us decide whether it's of interest to us. Let us make that decision. Give us that opportunity.
That's awesome.
Right? So what's in our wheelhouse are it's such, I as a private lender with a lot of flexibility, we are not major urban center focused. Sure, we love major urban center files. That doesn't mean we don't want to see them, okay? But some of our competitors are more major urban focused than we are. So we have a lot more flexibility in that regards to location, types of properties, strength of borrowers, all that type of stuff. To say what's in our wheelhouse, it is so wide. We lend on residential, obviously. We do a lot of construction files, a lot of industrial type properties, multifamily properties, revenue generating, country residential acreages. We're not that afraid of.
Right.
So it's just so varied. If we have a borrower that we like, a property that we like, a location that we like, we're going to try and get that deal.
So I guess the message really is, if you have a private deal, flip it over to Cedar Peaks. Worst case scenario, in 5 minutes, they'll say it's not for them and tell you why.
Absolutely.
And I'm sure in that conversation, based on them telling you why it's a no, you'll have a better understanding the next time, maybe what they'd say yes to.
And you will always get a personal email from either myself or my manager of business development and senior underwriter, always a personal email outlining our appreciation for you thinking of us and the reasons why we turned your deal down.
Thank you for
your quick response. I understand. Thanks for the explanation. That's what has one of the many reasons that's kept us around this long.
I was going to say, Lori, explains why Mark's around for 20 plus years. His level of customer service is impeccable, super friendly, super honest, nice guy, knows exactly what's going on. And I'm sure the brokers appreciate the fact that he's a straight shooter, tells it how it is, and says to them, listen, like, value's not there. Here's why the value's not there. or this income is not going to service. We're heading into a disaster. I don't want to take your client's house. So yeah. I think that's, I commend you for that. That's the best way to do it. And that's why you've been around. There's a lot of guys that show up and they're here for a few, they make a loud noise. They're here for a few years. And before you know, hey, where is that guy? Oh, he's gone. You know, it shows something when you've been around for 20 years.
Thank you. I appreciate that a lot.
What's your view on like credit today, right? Like you've been in the banking world for 40 years, you know, 35 years ago, not as easy to get credit from a bank, but it seems like nowadays everyone has credit cards. I mean, mortgages are tougher today than they were 10 years ago. But I still think there's a lot of ways that people can borrow money today, whether it be via a mortgage or unsecured. As someone who's been in the financial world for such a long period of time, like, is it a good thing? Is it a bad thing? What's your thought on it?
Well, it's never a good thing to be a credit seeker. That's a term from my banking days.
Sure.
And have high credit utilization and max everything out. We look at that when we're assessing loan applications, but we also look at circumstances. And let's be clear that Cedar Peaks is one of many equity lenders out there. And as long as we believe that there's a reasonable expectation that this individual has the ability and desire to make his mortgage payments, we are not concerned with TDS or GDS. Never calculated a TDS or GDS since the day I left the bank. Not even sure I'd even know how. No, I do know how to do it. But we just look at, is there a reasonable expectation based upon, you know, people that are self-employed, they're going to take out their $30,000, $40,000, or $50,000 a year to keep their personal tax low. Okay, right. The bank won't overlook that. I will. I go, look at, I know his company's making his car payment for him, and I know his company, I know he's writing off half his expenses, and we're at 65% loan to value. Like,
and his TDS is 150% based on his net income.
So, but credit is, you know, it comes into play. I'm more concerned with your R1s and your late payments than I am the amount of credit you might have.
Right.
That old 5C thing, one of them is character, right?
Yeah, so sure. It's funny, Mark, you say something about that though, because now lately mortgages have been reporting, like the lenders are reporting the mortgages onto people's bureaus. So it's one thing to see, you know, the guy missed a credit card payment.
Or a cell phone bill.
Yeah, the guy's in collections with Rogers because he got into a fight with someone and just tried to prove a point and they shoved him into collections. It doesn't exactly, that score is not going to really say who that guy is. But if you see the guy's missing his mortgage payments with the bank, that to me paints the clearest picture of all.
Totally. We've come to the conclusion that once cell phone companies, Rogers, Bell, started reporting on credit bureaus, we've come to the conclusion that over half the people don't pay their cell phone bills. We just ignore it. Means nothing. Tell me what you're doing with your credit card and your line of credit and your mortgage. I care more about that.
You know, running your business for 20 years, I'm sure you've been in touch with or been doing business with very wealthy people, right? You know, you have $60 million that you're managing currently. I would imagine that you have some investors that are larger on that scale. Over the years, and maybe not even part of Cedar Peaks, but maybe just, you know, through your path of where you've worked, have you learned something that always stuck in the back of your mind from individuals that you've had communication with that have a lot of money, that's why they have a lot of money, because they do X or Y, or I see there's a certain personality trait with these types of individuals. Have you ever figured any of that out? Anything that stuck with you?
Yes, for sure. Over the years, it's changed because some of these investors have been with me a long time. And back when, let's say, oil was going from 50 to 100, they were coming into my office and dropping off 200,000 and 300,000. And it was just like, you know, no defaults and rising prices. And
sure. Get my money out, Mark.
Yeah, get my money out, Mark. Today, those same investors are 20 years older.
Right.
So they're not 50 now. Now they're 70. So instead of giving me $250,000 for a deal, they're giving me $50,000 to $100,000. And they're saying no. And they're looking for lower loan to values and so that they can retain their wealth. That's you know, them making decisions like that is what made them wealthy.
Capital preservation. They want to, they don't want to screw it up. They have the money. They want to make sure it's safe.
Yeah. So it has changed the dynamics of our, not necessarily our investors, because a lot of them are the same. We're getting new ones all the time. You have to grow your business and so on. The dynamics and characteristics of our investors has changed for sure.
Is there a minimum amount of money to invest in Cedar Peaks, or can anyone come in and invest money? How does that work?
I'd like to say 50K. We are dealing in larger amount of mortgages. So if you don't want to put in 50K, you should maybe not be investing in private mortgages.
I couldn't agree with you more.
Yeah, good. That makes sense.
Because I think that's the investor that's going to be calling you the most, asking if everything's okay when that first payment bounces.
Yeah.
You know, so I know you told us about your work history. What about growing up? Like, was financial responsibility and literacy, was it taught to you? Did your parents have a good understanding and pass that along to you? Or is it something that you just kind of learned over time and through trial and error, you figured it out, or maybe you read or saw something, or how did it happen?
I'm going to honestly say that I was self-taught, self-motivated, you know, just I got the right genes to be a responsible, hardworking, honest individual. Left home at a fairly early age, although the home that I was brought up in, it was a wealthy home, but the most important thing in that home was money and not family. I left home at an early age, and I could have gone down one of two roads.
Right.
I chose the road of, I bought a restaurant when I was 17 years old. Worked at a pizza restaurant from 15, 16, whatever. I bought it outright when I was 17 years old. And then from that went into the property management, and you've already kind of gone over my career path. So it's all really been self-taught and self-motivated and self-made.
Sounds like never afraid to put a decent work, a day's work in. Always willing to grind and do your thing. And
a lot of long days, nights, weekends. Not so much anymore. Got it under control now. But
sure, he's got the lady friend. He's got the lady friend that won't let him work as long.
Well, she's my partner. She's part of. She's the owner too.
How big is the team now? How many people are at Cedar Peaks?
We have 8 people.
Wow, good for you guys.
We got 2 underwriters, 2 management, 2 accounting, and 2 administration.
Very good. And for people who want to send deals, and they just hit the number on the website and it'll be transferred to the right person, or who should they get in contact with?
Actually, right now, because of, and we haven't touched on this, which is fine because the brokers really don't care about this, but on the investor side, there's some security regulations from the Alberta Securities Commission and the Canadian Securities Authority. So we've temporarily put down our website so we can revamp it to meet those requirements.
I saw that actually. It said new webpage coming soon, right? Or something to that effect. And
so we're going to take away the investment.
But the most important thing I saw on the website is business as usual. Send in your deals.
Absolutely.
Love it.
So now, because of the access to credit bureaus and submission of files, that has all changed over the last 2 months.
It's definitely a big change in a very short period of time.
Oh, man.
And it's almost like you'd say people aren't prepared for it, but how could you be prepared for something that just changed on a dime?
Mark, 20 years in the business, you've seen the ups, you've seen the downs. Would you say the last year and a half has been the most turbulent between these new rules, these integrations, the governance of everything? Like, it's been pretty hectic, at least I know for us, but like must be super hectic for you guys too, adjusting, adapting to all these new things.
Yeah, we've had three major events that have happened to us. In 2008, we had the, what do you want to call it? You want to call it the financial crisis?
The credit crisis, all the tier B banks like HSBC, City Financial, they stopped doing business.
Wells Fargo moved out of Canada. I mean, it was a disaster.
Yeah.
I would say that ranks right up there with the worst. In 2010, the Securities Commission took over the regulation of syndicated mortgages, affected any private, in Alberta.
Okay.
BC, they came into effect, I think, last year. They got a kind of a couple of years ago, they got a bit of a reprieve from the securities regulation. I'm not sure about Ontario, but Alberta, the Alberta Securities Commission took over the regulation of syndicated mortgages. The definition of a syndicated mortgage is when two or more people participate in one mortgage loan. And anything with two or more people, and most of our loans do have two or more investors, that fell under the regulation of Securities Commission. That was our second most upheaval. That was a tough one to get through, still is actually, 10 years later. And as you say, the last year and a half and 6 months with regulations and rule changes, and obviously COVID, we haven't mentioned that C word yet, but I'm surprised we went 40 minutes and didn't mention the COVID word.
I try to forget about it. I just try to keep it out of my head, but it's here, right? It's here. It's not what we're living with.
Well, you should, Laurie, you should have worn the mask for the interview.
Yeah, exactly.
But I would say those are our three most difficult periods in 20 years.
Any files that you funded over the last little while that maybe you want to talk about, maybe challenging files you were able to get done, or just files that you liked?
Sure.
No specific addresses maybe, but you know, just something to give people an idea.
I kind of knew that was coming, so I'm ready.
Oh, there we go. Perfect.
Okay. Really quickly, not a lot of detail, sure, but this will give you guys and the brokers a little bit of
an idea.
Of the iceberg as to what Cedar Peaks does.
Sure. Sounds good.
$400,000 first mortgage, 65% loan to value. Purpose was to pay out a VTB and consolidation. What made this property a Cedar Peaks file was it was located in Island Highway in Royston, BC. Not many lenders would do that.
For the record, I've never heard of Royston, BC. So you're saying it's a small area, rural area. Okay, yeah.
$300,000 first mortgage, 35% loan to value on an industrial piece of property where the owner is going to construct and implement a farm implement store, retail location located in the county of St. Paul, Alberta.
I've heard of St. Paul.
There you go. Smaller mortgage, $88,000, 50% loan to value. Purchase an old property, rental property that's habitable, but just barely. He's going to demolish that and build a multifamily unit on that property.
So you guys do all sorts. Yeah, you guys are, you know, people say they do a lot of stuff. You know,
Mark actually does
a lot of stuff.
And he does lend everywhere.
That one was in Edmonton.
Okay, okay.
$575,000, 60% loan of value to purchase 15 multi-unit townhouses in Westlock, Alberta.
That's a good deal. That sounds like a good deal.
$825,000 for a dentist to construct a fourplex building in Calgary. A construction project right from ground up. Fourplex, $825,000 here in Calgary. Draw a mortgage.
So it's funny, you're bringing up all these different locations.
Okay, I got one more.
That's okay.
$600,000, 60% loan to value, Nelson, BC.
Heard of the Nelson.
And he's going to construct a duplex on this property in Nelson, BC.
As you're reading these, and you know, if you're just listening to this and you're not watching this on YouTube, you got to see Mark's face. You can tell he loves.
He's so passionate. He's beyond passionate.
I can see it in your face that you love the business. You love doing deals.
Yeah.
And it sounds like, I mean, I could be wrong. You could be good, but it sounds like the action excites you. You like seeing what's going on. You like looking at the deals.
He's obviously passionate. It's no doubt. The guy, just the way he's talking about it, you could just tell. He takes this very seriously, but he does it. He does love it. And that's why you can do it for 20 years.
Is Joe, it's right? You love it.
It's nice. Totally. And it's nice getting to the finish line like those ones, right?
Right.
I could pull up another pile that didn't get to the finish line. I wouldn't be quite as passionate.
Joe is now married. Before, Joe's wife was his wife, right? Obviously, you know, she was his girlfriend. And Joe said, you know, sometimes I invest in these mortgage deals. Why don't you try it out? And I don't know, maybe you should. I'll take it to a certain point and you can take it out.
Yeah.
But she says, I have $50,000 in savings. Is that going to do? And he goes, I have a great deal for you. It's in Alberta, right? And I think it's going to be a good deal. So Joe, you could take it from here.
So this is like just around, this was about 5 years ago. I think prices were still fine. She put the money into a deal in Fort McMurray. And I'm not sure if you remember, But 5 years ago, 4 years ago, there were fires that happened in Fort McMurray.
How could I forget that?
I'm watching the news. I'm not even kidding you. There was like, the camera just goes by a sign. It's like a burnt sign that says like arena or something. And I remember when I was looking at the appraisal, it mentioned that the house was next to an arena. And the first thing that comes to mind is I look up the name of the arena that the appraisal had, and no joke, because they showed this literally, the entire neighborhood is burnt down. Nothing, there's nothing left of it. I look at my wife and I, or at the time my girl, I go, I'm not sure how to tell you this, but the house that you lent on was burnt down in a fire.
We hope it was burnt down.
We hope it was
the
burnt
last
down.
Standing house.
It's not gonna be worth anything.
But
And I said, I'm 99% sure, because like the epicenter, it said it was like the arena was 0.03 kilometers from the house. And it's I'm looking at the video and I'm going, this looks like a meteorite hit the entire, like the whole place is burnt down. And I said to her, I go, call the insurance company right now and tell them to write you a check, because this is going to be, and by the way, they didn't want to write us a check.
But they end up covering it.
She calls because she's on title. It's a whole headache. We were behind Citibank. The guy who we gave the money to ended up like going blind because of the fires, unfortunately. He was an older gentleman, and the smoke, everything, it kind of messed up his eyes. And I think, he was already going that way. The daughter was dealing with it. Can't get a hold of the guy. We called the insurance company. They're like, we have to write a check to him, and he has to write you a check. That's how they were dealing with it. I told my wife, like, I think I have to buy you a flight to Edmonton, and you got to drive to Fort McMurray to meet this guy and figure this out. And she's looking at me. She's like, I'm absolutely going to kill you right now.
Like, what did you do to my last $50,000?
Literally, her life savings at the time. And I go and put it into this deal. And I'm like, 2 months it took. The insurance company finally wrote her a check. And I'm just curious, did you have to deal with any of those things?
Absolutely.
You did, eh?
Yeah, we had a couple houses under construction in Fort Mac and a builder that, through no fault of his own, and we ended up taking a bit of a haircut.
Sure.
It's the nature of the business.
Part of the business. From what I hear, it's always people who put their money in the first deal, they're nervous. The first time they put money into it, right? And they want to know what's going on, and maybe they're calling you, Mark, is my money okay? Hey, you put it in last week. Like, nothing could happen in a week anyways, but
he can't even miss his payment if he wanted to.
But once they've been in it for a while and they start to understand, they get addicted to it. They love it, right? They want to keep going.
Well, that's how we went from zero to 60 million. What you just described was my exact feeling when I put my $140,000 into an apartment complex development down in South Calgary, my first deal. And you go through, how does this work, right?
Right.
Every investor I have, they give you 50 grand and they wait till they get the post-dated checks and they wait till they get the lawyer documents and they wait till they get the certificate of title and then they wait for a payment and another payment. Then they go, okay, I'll give you another 50.
Right.
And then they're out golfing with their buddy and they go, you know, I started dealing with Cedar Peaks Mortgage and they got this pretty good thing going. And then that guy phones and he gives you 50.
Right.
And it just snowballs from there and you hit 60 million 20 years later.
And then you get phone calls where like, how come my money's still sitting? You haven't put it out yet. Absolutely. They're almost mad at you now. Yeah. It's like, Mark, what have you been doing while that my money is sitting for 3 weeks?
Yeah. Well, they love to roll over their funds on payouts. They want that out. Like, just don't even send it to me. Just
keep the lawyer's office. I'm going to spend it. Just leave it there.
But you know, it's a good lesson, you know, for people to listen to. Like, just because someone comes into your office and says, I have 50,000 or 100,000 to invest, doesn't mean that's the end of the line for them, right? They're taking a flyer, they're trying it out, they're getting their feet wet. So, you know, for people who are listening, or maybe not in the same type of business even, or maybe they're a mortgage broker and, you know, they don't want to deal with this small property with, you know, it's going to be a $30,000 mortgage from the bank. You don't know what's around the corner. You don't know what else they have, who else they know, you know, how many other people they're going to connect you to. So it's always important to treat everyone the same way. And that's absolutely at an A-plus level all the way through. So, but yeah, that's definitely.
And I will touch on that a little bit.
Sure.
Back in after the 2008 crisis, the Securities Commission, as I mentioned, said, wow, that was a disaster. Wonder if we should step in here and have a look at this industry, because a lot of it was mortgage related, right? The rules today are such that if you walk in, let's take Joe, your wife, who walks into my office, says, here's my last $50,000. I'm going to take a run on this mortgage. I actually could not accept her money. The Securities Commission has said, investors, if you want to invest in mortgages, you must be accredited. And you must not only be accredited, you must be suitable. And the suitability is stepped up by the security standards a lot. So accredited is basically net financial assets of $1 million or more, or income of $200,000 or more. But then just because you have that, that doesn't mean you're suitable. You could be 83 years old. It could be the fact that that's all you have and you have no assets, no other assets. It could be that you have to rely on that interest income
to survive,
food on your table, even though you're accredited by definition.
Right.
So not only do you have to be accredited, but as a dealing representative, we have to ensure that you're also suitable to the investment.
As someone who is always, you know, they have their investors' best interest at hand the whole way through. And I get that, you know, that vibe from you that, you know, it's let's make sure the money is safe. And we'll, you know, don't worry about the deal. If I don't feel good with the deal, we're not doing the deal. As someone who always has that best interest at hand for your investors, do those rules and regulations bother you? Like, does it bother you that maybe someone walks through the door that you think they maybe don't check all these boxes, but I think that they're right for the fund? Does that happen to you, number one? And number two, does it bother you that sometimes that happens for individuals?
Yes, it does happen. I'll give you an example. I have a doctor. He's a family physician, not all that old. I'm pretty sure he's in his 50s, so not all that old, makes great income. He only invests in mortgages with Cedar Peaks Mortgage. That's it. So when we talk about suitability in the Securities Commission, they talk about concentration. What percentage of this guy's available money is invested in exempt market product syndicated mortgages? They like to see 10%, which is ridiculous.
Right.
They might see that. They might not like that, but
yeah.
You know, we've got some flexibility there. There's no law. There's no written regulation under any Securities Act that said you cannot have any more than this. But if you have more than 10 or 15%, they are going to question it and want to see your suitability assessment.
Interesting.
For sure. So this guy says, the Securities Commission is not going to tell me what I can and cannot invest in. They're not. They can't. None of their business. If I want to invest over concentration, I will. Give me something to sign that says you've discussed concentration. You don't feel this is a suitable investment, and I'll sign a waiver.
Like a KYC form where they sign off on it, I guess. Or
the KYC you have to have to determine whether you're suitable and what the concentration is.
He's saying he's adding an additional waiver on top, which is like, and the guy's happy to sign it so that he can put his money out with Mark.
Yep. Yeah. He can be at 50, 60, 70% concentration if he wants to be.
Yeah, 10% is very low.
10%. Yeah, if you have a guy with $2 million, and he clear title to his house and a recreational property and some other assets. And he's got 2 million and he's limited to 200,000 with us.
Yeah, what's he going to do with the other 1.8?
It's
a question. So Mark has a proven track record to make the guy 8, 9, 10, whatever it is. And then the guy gets pushed away by, let's not even say Mark, by somebody else who's following that protocol. And then the doctor goes, okay, I guess I'll put it in the stock market. And he loses 10%. Will he feel better? Will the Alberta Securities Commission feel better, knowing that the guy diversified his portfolio but lost money instead of just parking with Mark, making his quiet 8% all day long?
And that's his thinking exactly.
First of all, you know, we usually do like a segment, like it's called "What Would You Rather" for deals, but it sounds like we can kind of skip that, and I can just pass the message along saying, you have a private deal, send it to Mark. He'll tell you right away if he wants it, if he doesn't want it. And best of all, he's not going to waste your time. You're not going to sit on a deal for 48 hours and have the broker sitting there twiddling their thumbs waiting for an answer. They're going to know very quickly.
Someone from Cedar Peaks is calling you that day, no matter what.
Calling or emailing, for sure.
Perfect. So, yeah, I mean, if that's the case, I mean, if I was a broker, someone who acts that way would be my first call all the time. Get the quick answer. If it's a yes, great, I got a deal done. If not, move on to the next guy.
And that's how we operate. Now, you know, by hearing back from us, you're not necessarily going to hear yes approved. You're going to hear in most cases, because in most cases, we don't get all the information, the whole story up front.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Right?
So
I think it's more a point of contact.
This looks like a deal that we can look at. Right. Can you send me the credit bureau report? It wasn't included. Or can you send me his financial statements? He didn't include those. But yes, right. We're, you know, thank you for the deal. And yes, we want to move on. Carry on.
I like it. And Cedar Peaks, if you could describe the company in one word, what would that one word be?
Flexible. Flexibility is what we're all about. It's one word, flexible.
That's a good word to describe a private lender, because if I was a broker, that's probably what I'd be looking for. Someone who isn't just going to look in a black and white box and say, doesn't fit. Or, you know,
too small, too big, too rural, too urban.
You're not afraid to sink your teeth into a deal and figure it out and find a way to make it work. My wife just
walked into our cottage here, and if she was to come up here and say hi, which she's not going to, but if she was, you would be looking at our head office. We're not on Bloor Street in Toronto. We're not on Robson Street in Vancouver. You're looking at head office right here.
That's awesome.
I love it. I get it. And, you know, finally, I don't know if you've listened to any of these before, but I'm a big time pizza guy. I've never been to Calgary before, actually, but I would imagine that at some point in my life, I'm going to be there. And when I'm there and I have my list of pizza places, what is the spot that you have to go to? Is there one particular place that everyone talks about?
Spiro's.
Spiro's.
S-P-I-R-O-S.
S-P-I-R-O-S.
It's not a franchise. It's not, you know, a Pizza 73 or a Papa John's or Pizza Hut.
Sure.
It's a family operation. Great pizza. There are others, but that's the first one that comes to mind.
It's a sit down? You go sit down or something?
Yep.
Okay. Cool.
Absolutely.
We'll add that to the list.
All right.
Mark, we really wanted to thank you for stopping in today. I think it was really informative. If there's anything to close it out that maybe you want to tell people that are listening, or if you think that you kind of gave out the information, is there something you wanted to say to close it off? Or
all right, I'm gonna give you something a little bit corny, but I hope it brings a little smile to faces.
Okay.
When you get a file on your desk, you owe to your client to go to your A lenders.
Right.
If that doesn't work, you owe to your client to go to a B lender. If that doesn't work, you owe to your client to go to Cedar Peaks Mortgage.
You heard it here first. You got your B lenders. You got your B lenders. You got your Cedar Peaks. Leave it in that list. You'll be good to go. To everyone else, thank you for tuning in. Follow Mortgage Automator on Facebook, LinkedIn, and Instagram, and Automator Group on Twitter. Go to askaprivatelender.com to check out all of our podcast episodes. Mark, thank you again. And
you've been awesome, Mark. Thank you so much.
Hey, guys, thanks very much. I appreciate the opportunity. And for all those folks listening now or down the road, hello, and we appreciate your business. Thank you.